All right, from college basketball back to pro basketball. Game 5's tomorrow night down in Los Angeles at Staples Center. The Jazz got a hard-fought win last night over the Clippers. Series tied at 2-2. Brian Seaman, the play-by-play voice of the LA Clippers, joining us here on the Bill Riley Show. Hey, Brian, how are you?
Bill, how are you? Great to meet you.
Well, what time did you get home last night or early this morning?
You know what? Usually, you're looking at a 2 or 3 a.m. arrival, which is standard for all of us that travel, that are lucky to travel in the NBA. But the time difference for us was okay. We got in about touchdown at about 11:30, and I was in bed, teeth brushed at midnight. So not a bad night.
I get that kind of service on University of Utah football charters, and I always tell people, you don't get the sky miles, but to be in your own bed 3 hours after the game ends is a pretty nice thing.
Not the worst thing in the world. The worst day I ever had in the NBA was great. So I'm not going to really complain about it all that much.
So last night, the Jazz gut one out at the arena downtown. It's 2-2 now. Clippers got a great effort again from Chris Paul. Crawford made an appearance last night making shots, and you kind of knew that from early on. But the rest of the offense was a little bit of a struggle. From your vantage point last night, what was the Clippers' biggest issue?
It wasn't – well, it was obviously defending Joe Johnson down the stretch. I mean, the Clippers led 87-80 and really had their hands on the steering wheel for basically 40 of the 48 minutes. The final 8 minutes, Joe Johnson took over, and I thought a couple of his baskets were easy. I thought a couple of them were really challenged by Luke Bamute, our probably best perimeter defender. And then I thought Joe made the right play and passing out. So my guess is I think he scored the last 11. He scored 11 in a row and then assisted on the final three baskets, a three by Rodney Hood, maybe two threes by Joe Ingles. So that was really the biggest issue. If you want to get into the nuts and bolts of it, I thought early in the first half, Mose Bates had drawn the coverage of Rudy Gobert out on the perimeter and wide open for two threes in a row. Instead, he drives it on Gobert, and predictably, Gobert blocked the shot.
Right.
I thought Redick looked uncomfortable, like trying to force the issue a little too much on both sides. Like he was trying to shoot it too much and too early, and then he felt the defense closing in on him. But even though I think he maybe had a couple of steps, he was too quick to get rid of the ball. He is clearly, and this is a great compliment to Joe Ingles, been taken out of his comfort zone. And I think that really has affected the Clipper offense. He can be the straw that stirs the drink. And if J.J. Redick gets it going, that opens up a lot of avenues for everybody else. And Joe Ingles has done an amazing job guarding J.J. Redick throughout this series. But it's a three-game series, as you mentioned now. Two of those games could potentially be played here in downtown Los Angeles. Every game has been down to the wire, and I don't think there's going to be anything different with that in the final potentially three games.
Talking to Brian Seaman, he's a play-by-play voice of the LA Clippers on radio as the game and series shifts back tomorrow night to Los Angeles. Doc said after the game he didn't think Rudy Gobert's presence was a big deal. It's one point I did kind of disagree with. I thought Rudy kind of prevented anything in and around the rim last night by some of the guys. What kind of impact on the game did you think Gobert had for the Jazz?
I thought he had a very good impact. You know, when he went down 17 seconds into the series, and I could bring up the tape if you wanted to, I was sincerely disappointed for Utah and the fans of the series. I thought that, well, that's a real big blow. And quite honestly, and careful what you wish for on two things, I thought, well, there goes a competitive series. I thought the Clippers would just run wild. And then I hoped that he would return. Well, it is a competitive series, and now he returns and maybe puts Utah over the top. I liked how he played last night. If you were dropped out of a parachute and had no idea that the injury he sustained, now 9 days ago, I thought he moved well. I thought he looked good. I thought he bothered a couple of shots. Doc actually thinks he has a bigger impact offensively for Utah than defensively for Utah, which says a lot about what he does offensively, because I think he and DeAndre Jordan are kind of cut from the same cloth. They're great with screen assists, and they're great with rolling to the basket. And I think that's what Doc prepares more for when you talk about Rudy Gobert. But I thought Rudy looked terrific last night, and that could be some bad news for the Clippers.
Brian, what does we saw this morning a report. Wojnarowski reported it, so you can take it to the bank. He doesn't miss on anything. So he says Austin Rivers probably will play tomorrow night for the Clippers. In what role? Obviously, we don't know. He hasn't played in a while. But I can remember the days when there was a lot of criticism of Austin Rivers coming to the Clippers, and clearly he's turned his game around, and he's a key part of this. Where does he impact the game most, or where does he help the Clippers most if he plays tomorrow night?
He'll help them with their pace. He'll help them go downhill. You know, when I was getting ready for this series and you looked at the Clipper players, and the Clippers win that series 3-1. Two games were kind of ugly. One game went the way to for Utah when they hit 10 straight threes, and the final game, which was kind of like the make or miss game for the in terms of winning the series, I thought the Clippers were just a more physical team. But when you look at the itemized statistics of the Blakes and the Chris's and the DJs, everybody was way below their season average, with the exception of Jamal Crawford and Austin Rivers. And I thought Austin did a wonderful job of putting pressure on the defense. He didn't shy away from Gobert, and he's a guy that's not afraid to go downhill and push the tempo. So it'll be interesting to see if he has any physical limitations with the hamstring that he kind of tweaked. It'll be about a month to the day when he comes back, to see if he's able to kind of push that tempo, be aggressive offensively. And if he can do that and see what he can do defensively, he might be a good guy to put on Joe Johnson. He might be a good guy to put on George Hill. So we'll see what he can do if he's got any physical limitations.
Where do you feel the Jazz have the biggest advantage right now based on the first four games of this series? Obviously, you take the regular season out, but where do you feel like the Jazz have the biggest advantage? Is it just their overall depth and health right now being 100%?
It is. I think it's their depth that has really been impressive, and it's a real credit to the front office for the Utah Jazz. I think, personally, the most underrated front office, not just in basketball, but in all of sports. They had a great young nucleus a year ago, but they fell short. Why did they fall short? Well, they weren't very good in close ball games with less than 5 minutes to play. And then down the stretch of the regular season, they dropped four of their final five. They missed the playoffs by one game. The front office goes out and gets Boris Diaw, George Hill, and Joe Johnson. The latter two, to me, really have put them over the top. And if they had been healthy all year, this is probably a 60-win team. So Joe Johnson's ability off the bench to knock down great shots has been huge for them, not just in this series, but throughout the year. George Hill's leadership and been there, done that type of vibe has been great as well. But I'll tell you what, how impressive has Derek Favors been? With the exception of Game 3, I mean, this guy was basically playing on one leg. Last night, after Joe Johnson, the second most dominant player in the game for Utah. So their bench has been very impressive. And the thing that's crazy, we don't even see Alec Burks. You know, I mean, Burks has been injured all year long. I think that guy can really play. So you're looking at a team next year, if they can keep the band back together, and I'd be shocked if Hayward decides to leave, that you're competing for one of the top two or three spots in the Western Conference. So clearly, without Blake Griffin, the Clippers have their hands full in the final three games.
Yeah, two things. First, on the Blake Griffin front, who's got to be much better than they have been? Obviously, Chris Paul's been fantastic. Crawford came out of his shooting slump last night. But those two guys alone aren't enough offense. Who's got to be better and really step their game up to kind of fill in? I know it's not just one person, but give me one guy that's got to be markedly better.
Oh, it's got to be J.J. Redick. He's got to find a way to either get open or use the gravity that he is attracting and free people up inside, or at least on the mid-range, because Joe Ingles has just made him irrelevant. Like, J.J. is not even a factor in any of the ball games in a positive way. It's not from a lack of effort at all, but he's got to find a way to be able to use what's happening to him to his advantage, and I don't think he's been able to do that consistently enough. But you need to see JJ get some threes. I think he had two of them last night. He's had four total in the four games played. Redick is a real key for these guys, especially during the regular season. Teams have had a few days off before a game, and all they have done is game plan for JJ Redick, trying to slow him down, because they know if he gets it going, then everybody else is going to feed off of that. So to me, JJ Redick is the number one guy that has to find his way to be able to have any Clipper success overall.
If he's not getting lobs and rim runners with a guy like Gobert there, does DeAndre Jordan have any real impact offensively?
Oh, yeah, yes, because he's a great screen setter. He's a roller that still puts pressure on the defense. You know, and I've had the advantage to watch this team for many games. You
right.
get to see the nuances of stuff that doesn't necessarily show up in the black and white box score. So, oh, no, totally, DeAndre Jordan is a factor. Even if he's not out there grabbing 18 points and 15 rebounds, if he can do nothing else and negate the presence of Rudy Gobert, job well done.
All right, tomorrow night at Staples Center, Clippers have the home court, but they've also got a lot of pressure, because I kind of feel like the team that wins tomorrow night, major, major advantage, if not probably the team that wins this series. So biggest key tomorrow night for the Clippers, Brian, in your mind is what?
You know, that's a good question because they didn't really play with much pace yesterday, but I think they have to come out and really match the energy for Utah and likely surpass it. And they have to be perfect, I think, for 48 minutes. Something they've done in the playoffs before. Remember, 2 years ago, they beat San Antonio, and I thought they played perfect in those four ball games. They have it in them, but I think Chris Paul has to be the best player on the floor. He was very good in game four. He was the best I've ever seen him in game three. We need that one again tomorrow night if the Clippers would have a chance.
And by the way, I just literally looked up your bio. I didn't realize you were a fellow Jayhawk.
What? We've been talking this whole time. Why are we talking about Jazz and Clippers, man?
Why aren't we talking about Paul Pierce? You and Paul Pierce came out about the same time, huh?
Listen to this. I was living, so what year did you graduate?
92.
Okay, I'm 98. So Paul Pierce was my, I lived in the Jayhawk Towers. He was my downstairs neighbor. His ceiling was my floor. So I got to see his first game at KU, his last game at KU. I called his games on the student station. So I went up to him. I was super excited to tell him about, hey, this great connection that we have. He said, cool, and walked away. It was almost as if he didn't even remember me. Like, I can't even believe he did remember me calling those games. What a slap to the face, man. My ego took a huge hit.
Paul clearly was not a big KJHK fan at the time.
No, 90.7 on the dial, but number one in your heart, man. Come on.
That is exactly right. Well, fellow Jayhawk and fellow sports broadcaster and fellow play-by-play man, Brian Seaman, kind enough to join us here on the Bill Riley Show today. Rock chalk, my friend. Have a great call, and we'll catch up again soon.
Absolutely, Bill. It was a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Brian. Brian Seaman with us here on the Bill Riley Show today here on ESPN 700.